take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back, horse stock is attached. Head is matted black, got the bushes black to match. Riding on a horse, ha, you can whip your Porsche. I've been in the valley, you ain't been up off that porch. Now, can't nobody tell me nothing.
You can't tell me nothing.
Can't nobody tell me nothing.
You can't tell me nothing.
Riding on a tractor, while in my bladder. Cheated on my baby, you can go and ask her. My life is a movie, but riding in Porsche. Cowboy hat from Gucci, Wrangler on my booty. Can't nobody tell me nothing.
You can't tell me nothing.
Can't nobody tell me nothing.
You can't tell me nothing.
WFNP Rosendale.
WFNP
88.7 FM
Rosendale.
I'm bored, cheap and cheerful.
Jesus, you're the center of my joy. All that's good and perfect comes from you. You're the heart of my contentment, hope for all I do. Jesus, you're the center of my joy. When I've lost my direction, you're the compass for my way. You're the fire and light when nights are long and cold. In sadness, you are the laughter that shatters all my fears. When I'm all alone, your hand is there to hold. In the simple things in life, you're the music in the meadows and the streams, the voices of the children, my family and my home. You're the source and finish of my highest dreams. Oh,
Jesus, you're the center of my joy.
That's good.
All that's good and perfect comes from you.
You're the heart
you're
of my contentment.
Everything.
Everything.
The center.
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 Welcome back to WFNP 88.7 Rosendale. My name is DJ Worm, and this is the most special edition of Catharsis Live to ever take place. I'm honored to have a special guest here today, perhaps the most special a guest can get. Dr. Daryl P. Wheeler, president of our great school, is here to talk about all things Dr. Wheeler. Thank you so much for being here with me, Dr. Wheeler.
It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
I do want to ask first, perhaps the most pressing question on my mind since I first heard your name. You have a P initial in your name, and actually also your first name starts with the letter D, much like our last president. Is this a requirement of the job? Is there a connection between you and this initial that we don't know about?
So the middle initial or both initials?
Any or all of it.
It's a secret club of DP presidents. Yeah, I'm number two in the succession chain.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. That's what I thought.
I think it's a major coincidence. Just a coincidence, for sure.
In your recent interview with the Oracle, you mentioned the names of several musicals that you enjoy listening to. Where exactly does your love of musical theater come from? Were you once a theater kid?
I was never a theater kid, but in college I did perform in the Petit Prince. And I probably orchestrated kids to do stuff when we were growing up in the neighborhood, different kind of fun, theatrical kind of events. I seem to remember getting, when I was in kindergarten, a toy that was a showboat, and somehow that intrigued me. But I was never a theater kid, never had sufficient talent, but the musicals, the theater, it gives you a place to escape, I think, and I thoroughly enjoy participating.
Mm-hmm. Who did you play in The Little Prince?
Let's see, I think I was the fox? I can't remember. No, I didn't have a major role. It was an ancillary role, so it couldn't have been the sly fox.
I think all the characters in Little Prince have their own special quality. I'm sure you did a fantastic job.
let's say that I waited to do it as a senior, so I wouldn't have to worry about being asked back another year.
Yeah. I think I joined the musical in my senior year also, and once I did it, I was like, wow, I should have probably done this a long time ago. In that same interview, you talked a little bit about being a Leo astrology sign, which I think is very important to this campus community. Do you know the astrology signs of the rest of your family, your daughter, your husband, and even your dog? Some people are really into dog astrology.
I think my dog is still a Leo, born in August. My husband is a Cancer, and our daughter is an Aries, I'm pretty sure.
Interesting. I'm a Cancer, too, so I have an affinity for Cancer signs and all water signs, but that dynamic of different astrology signs within one household can be very interesting.
It could be, but it's probably better than having all the same ones in one household.
Yeah, my mom's a Cancer, so it's two Cancers, and my sister's a Scorpio, so it's a very interesting household.
I like to think we complement the sun sign and the moon sign. So.
We are on the radio, and I think it would be heinous for us to not touch on your musical tastes as well, which we heard a little bit of on your way in. You have such a varied taste in music, ranging from the classical to Carrie Underwood. What is it about a song that captivates you into wanting to play it over and over again?
Wow. Very, very good question, and I wish I really knew the secret sauce ingredient. It in part depends on context and mood. So if I'm in a dance mood, and I'm a kid who, you asked me if I was a theater kid. No, but I grew up in the era of house music, and I grew up in Chicago. And if you chronicle house music in Chicago, I danced in clubs where Frankie Knuckles was the DJ, and Frankie Knuckles is known as the godfather of house music. And house music, for those of you who are not familiar, it is a post kind of disco era music that was really developed in urban environments, particularly Black and Latinx, Latino environments, but it is a music you strictly dance to. You don't listen to it, you dance, you move, you express yourself. You think of the things you saw with Madonna doing Vogue and the stuff that was going on the piers in the 80s and 70s, that kind of music. So. But if I'm contemplative, if I'm quiet, the classical music, spiritual gospel music touches the soul and the heart in ways. We already talked about dramatic music, so I did clown around a lot in college and used to love Rocky Horror Picture Show and got a pretty rapid penchant for being being Dr. Frankenfurter. And would come out and actually wow the crowds with the cape and the whole bit. So that was fun.
Yeah, I think I went to my first Rocky Horror Picture Show over at Dutchess Community College like a few years ago, and it was fascinating, the whole thing. And it made me want to be part of the club, the family of everybody who knew all of the little things. And I was lucky they handed us like all of the props we would need.
You mean like duck?
Yeah, and we had a newspaper and we were throwing things at people. I had no idea what was going on, but it was so fun.
I think I've been to more than 20 film sessions, and so those were line up and get ready. Those were hilarious. It was tons of fun.
yeah. I definitely would love to go to another Rocky Horror Day someday. Every part of it was just fascinating. Even the like rituals with the new people coming in.
You mean the virgins?
Oh yeah, and the games they play with us beforhand, and writing the big V's on our foreheads with the lipstick on our way in.
Okay. Well, we do live on a campus where we do entertainment, so maybe we could do it on campus one day.
Yeah, I know. I was just recently at the drag club's show. They had a show recently, and it was very captivating. The whole thing was fascinating. I walked in late, and I wish I'd been there the whole time because every different performance was unique, but they were all so captivating to watch. They really brought the crowd in, too. That was like maybe the best part, was that we were all part of it a little bit.
Yeah, feeling that you can be a part of it, I think that's also captivating. And I think that's where music, you know, touches you. Like, do you feel a message in the music? That's why it's hard to, you know, it can come from any genre. I mean, I come from a family on my mom's side that there are deep roots in far eastern Ohio near the Pennsylvania border, and family members who grew up playing banjos and the like. And mm-hmm. So if you go to one of our family reunions, you're very likely to see a cousin playing banjo and the family very much engaging around that, which may be an atypical kind of manifest for somebody who looks like me. I know the first time I took my husband and daughter to one of my family reunions, they were like, where are we? It was eye-opening.
I've seen a lot of videos of people playing the spoons, and I think it's just fascinating. If I were to pick up any instrument, I think it would be the spoons because it's just so fun. It looks like so much fun.
I've never played them, but I guess it's a cheap way to get
it. Yeah, no doubt. Sort of going to the idea of when you were in college, were there any particular organizations or clubs that you found yourself, like what sort of activities on campus life did you get involved in?
Other than classroom, I don't think you would characterize me as nerdish, but I was really more of a reserved student, so I wasn't on the edge of too much. So Alpha Phi Omega, which was the service fraternity, that was definitely one that I participated in. I didn't join any national fraternities. I was an exchange student in Denmark. I participated in Orchesis, the dance group, for a bit. I did do that one stage production I told you about. So, yeah, every marginal kind of extroverted stuff. But more of an introvert, hanging out with a small group of friends, just being a student on campus, but not a big kind of organization participants. I did do a radio show every now and then, like yourself. And, of course, you can guess the genre of music mostly was house music. It was my time to just, like, really inundate the hills of Mount Vernon, Iowa with house music.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating that you went to Denmark. How did you enjoy yourself being abroad?
It was great. I mean, I know we talk about exchange programs here and the international program, so I have that experience of what it's like to your first international exposure when you're in college. It was illuminating. I was scheduled to go to Germany. At that time, I changed majors three times when I was in, well, maybe four, when I was in undergrad. And this is when I was a German major. And I was scheduled to go to Germany, but the trip didn't have enough people to go. And so when you know the drill, you calculate how many credits you're going to earn towards your major. And if I wasn't going to go to Germany and get the 10 credits or however many credits I thought I was going to get, then it wasn't going to work out for the major. But they had a trip to Denmark, so I switched majors again and swapped over to sociology and did a comparative study of Danish healthcare and U.S. healthcare. Very pragmatic, even at that age. Denmark was an interesting country. I had no idea what the language was going to be like. I just knew it was going to be in Europe. Had a wonderful host family. The family I stayed with, the mother, she had been raised, she's Danish, but her father had been an ambassador or a diplomat in India. So they had a lot of Indian influences in the household. And she was a professional nurse by training, nurse educator. The father was an architect. They had two kids who were younger than I was. But I will say it was a very interesting time in 19, I think I was there 79 or 80. And I was going into towns where even at that point in time, nobody had ever physically seen a black person. And so there was a lot of curiosity about a person that looked like me from the Danish kids. And I mean, they wanted to touch your skin, they wanted to touch your hair. And that was new and unusual for me growing up. I was like, wow, why are they so compelled? But you start to understand it and realize, I guess that still has an influence on me in terms of realizing how important it is to be the first sometimes and to set a tone for what it means for other people to encounter something different.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting that you had that experience. And I think that sort of same idea translates a little bit into the idea that you are our first, not only openly gay president, but you're our first black president. And I think that having that sort of a figurehead for our campus community, especially being a PWC institution, it's definitely created a shift in the way our campus is able to communicate and feel belonging. And I guess I would love to know how you've used your unique life experiences a little bit to better serve this community as our first black president and also our first openly gay president.
Those attributions known publicly in interviews, I think it's really important. So if you remember back to my candidacy, it's not necessary. Maybe I put it in the letter at some point, but when I'm communicating with other people, it's important for me to help them to have a language to understand me. Because if, hopefully I'll get around to your question, but to be truly authentic to myself, I have to make sure that people know where my grounding is. And so my identity, who I am at this point in my life, is deeply impacted by my racial, my gender identity, my sexual gender orientation, my academics, my economic, all those things become really critical because, like you were just talking about, the diversity of my interest in music, the fact that I've been an exchange student, all those things shape Daryl Wheeler. And trying to help people to get to see the totality because people often see one thing. And the other, and one of the reasons I mentioned always being a gay person, one is to make other LGBTQI folks know that there are people out there who are in front of the audience, but also to help the audience not to sit in a questioning mode, like, I wonder. I've done presentations where afterwards people are like, I didn't want to ask you, but are you gay? Are you bisexual? Or, you know, are you straight? And so I just kind of get that out of the way. But it does influence how you see the world, so that I probably have a much greater tolerance for ambiguity. Growing up in the late 60s and 70s in a very, very segregated Chicago, which, if you know Chicago, it is amongst the most segregated northern cities in the country, you develop a capacity to sit with inconsistencies. And so inconsistencies might be where you go into a club and the white guy in front of you is say, hey, come on in, and they stop you and ask you for three IDs. It might be any number of subtle differences in a classroom experience in college where you prepare a paper that has no errors in it, and somebody's like, well, who helped you with this paper? Things of that nature. You have to develop a compass and a tolerance for it. Doesn't mean that you have to like it, but you have to not let those things set you back. And how you get to be in a position today, I have to live in a situation where I know that I am a radical difference for a lot of people, and I can't let their limitations kind of disorient me when I'm trying to set a tone. And so you have to really buckle down to do this work. And, you know, then when we talk about the LGBTQIA+ world in which we live, you see what's happening around us, and we have to develop a capacity, a temperament for being able to manifest what we call resilience, the ability not to be so angry that you become dysfunctional and lose sight of what you're trying to achieve. So all of those things come together, and then I hope that my academic and career preparedness give me a really, really solid tool chest from which I draw experiences and knowledge to lead an academic institution. So a lot of content there, but I don't think there's a simple way to talk about that question.
It is. It's a very complicated question. And I know our campus is blooming with a lot of diverse people of all different sexualities and gender orientations. And, you know, I think in the face of everything that's been going on in our country, I think having a face of somebody out there, here, even just here at this institution, who we know will be looking out for us, I think is sort of one of those small beacons of hope that we have day to day.
I like to think so, because that's a reciprocal event, because when you step out, when I step out, to know that a student or students or community is either got your back or is just there quietly beaming with pride and respect and thankfulness, that feels great, because you know that what you're doing makes a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I think even in the short time that you've been in office so far, I think the campus as a whole absolutely feels a sense of pride in having you as our president, and knowing all of those things are true for us.
And that is phenomenal. And I partially attribute it to the great leadership of prior presidents who have left a situation here on this campus, which is a strength position to leap forward from. So that's great.
Yeah. And I think we also have a very strong sense of community through our clubs and our organizations on campus, such as like our Pride group, and we have the Drag Club, and we have just, I mean, every time I've talked to people about the school, I say that no matter what in like very niche interest or a particular group you subscribe to, there's going to be a club for you somewhere on campus. And I think that is one of the most wonderful parts about the school, is that you will always have people And I know, because I've been to a lot of campus events so far, I see you very often at campus events. Has there been any particular like event, or like, I know I saw you, you were at the museum opening. Has there been anything particularly interesting to you that you've attended, or any sort of favorite thing you've been?
You know, I, again, favorite is kind of like asking a parent to identify a favorite child in the family.
Yeah.
There's danger in doing that. But in each of those events, I mean, especially this first year, I've been on a number of different academic campuses, held positions in different institutions, and you have to get through the first year to get a basic understanding of the rhythm of that institution. So going to all the diverse events is intentional, because I don't know a community if I don't get out there and experience it. So when I've gone to athletic events, rooting and cheering for our teams and being seen, when I go over to the spring equinox, you know, whether it's a Dorsky event or a diversity event or the poetry, whatever it is, there's a reason for being there, and that is for me to understand the phenomenal place that is SUNY New Paltz and the people who make it. Such.
Yeah, we have a very unique heartbeat, I think, on campus. And as I think, as a senior, looking at sort of the way our campus has evolved so much in the 4 years that I've seen it, I can only think of having excitement to see where our campus sort of ends up when I return as an alumni, which is even a scary word to think about. I have to go down to the gift shop and buy my alumni t-shirt at some point, but I've been putting it off. I guess getting back to the arts, where do you see the role of like the arts in the life of a college student?
Mm-hmm. Well, for a campus like ours, which is oriented around a solid liberal arts education, the arts have a critical, I mean, liberal arts. So part of it is, you know, arts provide us with forms of expression. They can teach us patience and temperament. Arts have the ability to have physiological calming effects or elevating our tensions or our emotions. It can play a lot of different roles. I think that if, you know, right now we have our manufacturing and design that is a collaborative between like the Hudson Valley Venture and then our manufacturing and then the arts. This is the frontier. How do you bring the talents of these seemingly diverse experiences, science and art, humanities and art, math and art, you know, business and art, how do you bring those together? Well, they all exist in the same people, and they can change the lives of people. And I don't even think we've begun to tap and measure the power of art. So as a scientist, I would ask, you know, do we know? What are the benefits of somebody doing a radio show or being engaged? Does it result in better professional outcomes? I think there's so much that we could be doing to elevate and engage the arts in the life of our students and faculty.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember when we were in the pandemic, I was in a couple of studio art classes, and seeing the way that all of the departments were able to shift so quickly and adapt so that we were still able to feel a sense of a creative form for us to use when we were at home. It was really important, I think, to the life of a COVID student, because having still that break in between all the Zoom meetings to be able to like physically make things with your hands still, even though you're not on campus, you still sort of felt like you were on campus, because you knew that there were other people doing the same thing as you.
Right. And I suspect it had a calming effect, or it had a grounding effect, if not.
Yeah.
Grounding, right?
Oh, absolutely. I can think of, I had to make a long chain of events occur. So like I knocked a ball over and it knocked all of these wooden blocks over, and I spent all day working on it. And then when it was finally done, it was like the best thing I had done all week, besides like I probably took a trip to the gas station with my mom. But like that day that I got to like put together all of my childhood blocks for art class was fantastic, because it was something other than just sitting on Zoom in front of my computer.
And you know, I bet if somebody measured your bio, the pressure tips and physiological effect, it was really calming.
Yeah, and I think I've seen a lot of resiliency built in the students who experienced COVID here on campus, and even when they were in high school. There's a strong sense of resiliency because we've been through all of this, and we know that we can make it because we're all here again. And I really do applaud our campus community for being able to push through something like that and still feel a sense of pride at the end of the day.
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, absolutely.
On that theme of resiliency, you use COVID. What strikes me is we mentioned before the kind of the state of the world. Specifically, we were talking about LGBTQI kind of things, but I think there's a lot of stuff that we would like to change in the world around us. How do you think New Paltz prepares you to go into a world with so much uncertainty and great need?
I think a lot of it has to do, again, going back to that idea of community, because when you're here, you get to see that there is a community around you of people who know exactly what you're going through and can relate to you. And I think even past college, once you leave here, knowing that they may not be the same people, but that there are going to be other people out there who are going to give you the same sense of belongingness that you've sort of felt on campus.
And how have we prepared you to respond to people who don't welcome you and who don't have that same sense? Because there are a few of them out there.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the world is far from perfect in terms of being accepting of everyone. I think knowing that at the end of the day, there might be three people who don't feel accepting of you, but there are 20 others who will accept you. And I'm a psychology student, so a lot of my training has been on the psychology issues of the world. And I think understanding why people do some of the things they do and why people feel unable to accept people has been very helpful for me personally, because once I look at it, I think looking at things from a scientific perspective is very helpful, and taking sort of the emotional out of it for a moment so that you can understand where the other person's coming from.
And how can you use your talents as an art person, as a person who has a cultural understanding, to help move other people into different spaces, or either just be able to respond when they're not always so level-headed and nice?
Yeah. I think having an arts background and understanding the world from the way that I do has made me feel, I guess, I feel less anger towards other people and more so a sense of wanting to help them understand. I have been going through a lot of this in just my past few years of life, and helping people understand why accepting other people is going to be beneficial for the other person, but also for you, because you're never, once you leave here, the world's not going to look much different. You're still going to see lots of different people. I remember in orientation, we talked to the kids a lot coming in for the first time, that it might be very scary when you walk on campus for the first time, because it's maybe the first time you're seeing so many different types of people. And I think we do a very good job of starting that understanding early of that we will accept people, like giving names but also pronouns is like a very common practice on the campus. And it's been very nice to watch the incoming freshman class learn that how we do things around here, and that we are a very tolerant community in that sort of a way.
See, and thank you for allowing me to ask you questions, because hearing your responses, and in my ears, it echoed some of the things that I was describing. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I started out my time here not being super connected to a lot of opportunities on campus, especially because my school year got sort of cut off with COVID. But sort of I've been adding on like things that I do as I've been here for a while. And so like I became an RA, and then I joined the orientation program, and I found with everything that I've added, I've been able to learn a new set of skills. And that's why I always tell people to get as much involved on campus as you can, because then you feel like a sense of purpose while you're on campus.
And you said something really important to my ears again, when you said every time I add something on. I didn't hear you say every time I take something off. And what that says to me is that when we do this right, you don't get a sense of being overburdened. You don't get a sense of being weighed down. But sometimes more is just that, more. And it can feel great. Of course, it's a point of negative return. But when you're doing things because you believe in it, because it touches you in those ways, that's not work. That certainly isn't burdensome work. It's actually work that is enlightening and uplifting.
Yeah, I mean, I could think of last year I was given the opportunity to be Hugo the Hawk for graduation, and they said something to me about, like, you know, you'll be paid, and I said, I could do this for free. This is on my bucket list for before I graduate. And I think there are a lot of small things that are on everybody's sort of list of things, really cool things that you could do before you graduate, because I feel like I learned something new about something we have on campus every day. Like I went to, we have a positive play lab where they're literally just board games and clay, and you could just go play and do whatever you want, which I didn't even know existed. And it was the greatest hour of my life.
Wow.
Because you got to just play and not worry about everything outside of the doors.
Where's that? What time do I get to do play?
Yeah, it's a fantastic room, and the psychology department, I guess, runs it. But there are so many like small things that are available to us on campus that I think just add on to our ability to grow. Like, even we have a greenhouse, and mm-hmm. if you visit the greenhouse during their open hours, you get to see like the most beautiful flowers, and you could walk around campus and just wander into so many different things that you didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. Like, I tell people all the time to go visit the museum, because there's always something new happening, and we just have so many opportunities. It's like it's not even like, do I have to add this to my calendar? I run into the problem of how many things can I add to my calendar exactly. that I just really want to do.
Right. It's kind of like when you ask me, you know, which are your favorites? If I were to ask you which of those are your favorites, it probably depends on the day. And like,
oh, yeah.
Favorites.
Yeah. I have to start like deciding which are the most important things for me to get to, because I just I know I can't see everything, but I wish I could. I wish I could split myself into three people.
Well, the good thing is, as an alum, you'll have many opportunities to come back and keep experiencing things.
Yeah, I'm sure the campus is not finished seeing me. And, you know, I plan on being in the area after graduation, so I'm sure I'll be wandering around on campus. And I think that's another great part about the school, is that when people are leaving, they often love the school so much that they either come back and work. We have so many alum who work here because they just love it here so much, or you come back as an alumni to visit and to help do panels and talking about life after college. We have such a profound sense of community in our alumni as well.
Yeah, I just came off of two trips, February and March. February was one trip, and twice in March, meeting alums in Florida, Atlanta, and D.C., and they are just phenomenal. I mean, some people graduated as early. I think I met somebody from class of 1968. and some were as recent as 2020, 2021. So folks are out there thriving and very much connected to this institution.
Yeah, I was putting together some famous alumni we have for a post for my hall Instagram, and I learned that so many very famous people have gone to school here, and so many like very inspirational and profound thinkers and creators as well. Even people like, I learned some of the cast of Jersey Shore. One of them went here for a minute, and one is like from the area, so they know this school. But to think that we have alumni branched into everything.
That's right.
All careers, we have alumni there doing it. I think that's part of why leaving the school feels less scary, because you know that there are people out there who did this and are already successful.
You've got that network for success out there.
Yes. Yeah, and the tools that we have also at our fingertips in terms of alumni support after graduation is just incredible. The idea that we can come back and ask for help even after we graduate. So graduation is more of a formality in terms of our involvement on campus. You're no longer technically a student, but you're just as welcome here as anybody else.
I mean, you really start your relationship as a hawk from the time you put that application forward, and it continues for the rest of your life. Commencement graduation is just another milepost on that journey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly is maybe the biggest, but it's not going to be the last piece of your life as a hawk.
It'll be the day that you have your nuptial ceremony or your family back in the future. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of so many stories of people who met here who have found each other for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And that being here was like the tip of the start of their life. Yeah. And that it sparked something that caused the rest of their life to be just perfect for them.
I met one of those couples in the fall during alumni weekend, and this was a couple that at least one of them was being inducted into the 50th anniversary class, and they met on campus.
That's beautiful. Yeah, the idea, and even in talking to some alumni, it's funny how everybody has sort of the same. It's like some of the terms of campus life has shifted, but there are some things that just never fade out in terms of how we all talk about campus. It's like you could talk to an alumni from years ago, and it's like that they are in the same class as you, because they just understand all of it. I guess my last question is in terms of your dog. I feel like I would be sad if I didn't ask about your dog, because I have a dog at home, and we just recently opened up. He got like a subscription box with all these like toys in it, and it's like his favorite day of the week. And I guess I would love to know more about like what kind of dog he is, and does he have like a favorite type of toy? Is he like a chewer? Is he a peeler?
Webster is a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier, so he's in a terrier family. They're known as the clowns of the terriers. They just have a persona that will make you laugh sometimes. Part of the reason we got that breed is because they don't shed. Our last dog was a shedder, and it's like, okay, enough hair dogs. He's now 7 months old. I think, yeah, he just turned 7 months old. And at home right now, he's walking around with a cone on his head. Because he had that surgery.
Oh, that's always a sad day when they come home with the cone on.
Yeah, so, but he's in recovery and doing fine. The toy, he likes squeaky toys, that's for mm-hmm. sure. He likes things that he can flip around and throw and chase, but right now he can't chase anything because of the
yeah.
surgery.
My dog is also a squeaky toy lover. Anything that'll make a noise, and some of them crinkle too, that really gets him.
Oh,
yeah. And we have so many, there are dogs who are sort of like characters on campus. They're the same dogs who you always see, and everybody knows them. And I think being somebody who has dogs at home, I almost never feel like I miss them too much, because I always see dogs. I always have the opportunity to hang out with animals. because people from the community just happen to, they come through here to walk their dogs.
As long as they pick up after me.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I even have a resident who's a dog, and she's the sweetest. And so I guess, unfortunately, we're running out of time, but I would love to thank you for being here and for taking the time to tell us more about yourself.
Well, it was my pleasure to be here, to have a conversation with you, to see your colleagues here. Hopefully, this won't be the last time you invite me back. And you can't do it every week, but anytime we get to get out of my office and engage with the students, it's a winning opportunity for me.
So going into our little break here with the PSAs, afterwards we're going to play Young, Gifted, and Black by Nina Simone. And I guess, do you have any final words you'd like to say to the people?
This is a campus-wide communication. So, you know, I just value our students and our staff and just want to say how proud I am to be the president here, and that as the president, I am, you know, there's one president, but it takes the entire community to make this school successful. So I thank you, all of you, from our facilities, our students, our faculty, our staff, for everything you do to make SUNY New Paltz a great place. Thank you.
Well, you heard him. Everybody, don't touch your dials or your I don't know, your computers, however you're listening. Don't turn off the device, because we've got more of his fascinating music interests playing after the break.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like fish sticks. Filets, I get, but sticks? Maybe we can just compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with Brie?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
If your skin could talk, would you listen?
As your skin, I forgive you. I forgive you for damaging me before prom, on spring break, and at tanning salons. But if you continue to tan, I hope you can forgive me. Forgive me when I start developing wrinkles and age spots. Forgive me if I develop melanoma when you're only 22.
Protect your skin from the second most common cancer in young women 15 to 29 years old. Learn more at spotskincancer.org. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
You
Hello, hello again. I am finally here to sign off for the day. Thank you so much for joining me to hear all about Dr. Wheeler. Playing us out, I've got Before He Cheats by Carrie Underwood, which was probably my favorite of all the songs that Dr. Wheeler sent me. So I'll see you next week.
Slow dancing with a bleach blonde tramp, and she's probably getting thirsty right now. He's probably buying her some fruity little drink, 'cause she can't shoot whiskey right now. He's probably up behind her with a pool stick, showing her how to shoot a combo, and he don't know.
I will have to start getting my fashion advice from somewhere else other than the website of a mid-tier suburban Boston classic alt-rock radio station. It's all on you now, SUNY New Paltz, WFNP 88.7, The Edge. Don't let me down.
We won't let you down, Mr. Colbert, because SUNY New Paltz is the best-dressed college campus, and we have an awesome radio station, WFMP The Edge, Rosendale, 88.7 FM.
Dancer.